Brian, good morning.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be with you. How you doing?
Excellent. And let's get to it. You can flesh out this class, just a pair of contemporary inductees.
Yeah, we had 11 finalists, and Mark Cassie and Wise Dan are the two that crossed the 50% threshold barrier to get in, and there's certainly a couple of exceptional ones right there. And we had two in our historic review category, Daryl McHarg, an Eclipse Award-winning jockey from the 70s and early 80s, and Tom Bowling, who goes back to the early days of racing, a little bit in the post-Civil War era there, won the Travers, won a lot of big stakes in that era, and our Pillars of the Turf this year, Alex Heedley-Chandler, J. Keen Dangerfield, and George Widener Jr. So it's a class of seven. Obviously, every year it's a really good group, and this year is certainly no exception to that.
Well, and for those that may have forgotten who was involved, in terms of the 11 finalists, let's give them that background. I think everybody knew Wise Dan would be a it would be a slam dunk, but I continue to be a little disappointed that Kona Gold can't get over the top.
Yeah, a few years ago we changed the rule to kind of allow for the voters to vote in as many or as few candidates as they want. Previously to that, it was a maximum of four. Prior to that, there was voting that was just category based, where you could pick one trainer, one jockey, one male and one female horse, and there's a lot of great competition out there. Kona Gold, you got, Rags to Riches, who won the historic Belmont and Oaks winner. Blind Luck and Havre de Grace. Doug O'Neill was on the ballot this year. Christophe Clement. David Whiteley. I mean, it's just, a lot of great people and horses on the ballot. Corey Nakatani. And it just shows how tough it is to get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, and one of the other, I think the one unmentioned horse, Game On Dude, was up for the first time. And another of the honorees, at least as a nominee, finalist, yep, as it were, because it's an involved process. But, Wise Dan and it's funny, I happen to have talked to Charlie Lopresti at some point over the winter and said to Charlie, you said, I hope you're, hope you're planning on being here and being in Saratoga for the induction. We're not sure how that's going to work. We'll talk about that in a minute. But of course, the Mort Fink, who we lost, now it's got to be maybe what, a year and a half since, yeah, or maybe, yeah, a year and a half, 2 years. Mort Fink's passing, and Wise Dan kept him alive, boy, for that whole run. That something for Mr. Fink to look forward to time and again. And for Cassie, they sent Mark a congratulations, and we'll have him probably tomorrow or Friday to talk about it. He's just 59, so there's going to be plenty more wins. For McCark, who's from Oklahoma, and one of those middle century riders. We just had this conversation with Bill Boland. McCark had a really solid career, and it's interesting with jocks a lot of times, Brian. I don't know what the formula is necessarily to why a Corey Nakatani hasn't gotten over, when a lot of his contemporaries who have similar resumes have. It's a strange phenomenon.
Yeah, McHarg was inducted by the Historic Review Committee, so they're
yep,
looking at guys,
no, I understand,
who, more than 25 years out, and right. Nakatani obviously has a great resume too. I mean, 10 Breeders' Cup wins. I believe he's in the top 12 all time in earnings. And he's been there for a while. And a lot of times it takes a little while. I mean, I've seen over the years, it took Randy Romero, I think, 10 years to get in. From the time he was placed on the ballot, and Craig Perrett, it took him, he'd been on the ballot I think a dozen times over the years. So, I certainly think Corey is Hall of Fame caliber, and I think his time will probably come sooner rather than later.
Well, and you mentioned David Whiteley, and you know, there is a group of voters I know that are dedicated to, you know, voting for him and getting him recognized. And I think one of the difficulties for him is that, you know, people don't necessarily understand. Some of the voters of certain age and experience don't understand the era in which he trained and the, you know, the pronounced success he had in a different manner of training, Brian. It, you know, just because he didn't win 6,000 races, I really don't understand why Whiteley's had such a hard time, you know, accruing votes.
It's certainly one of the unique things about our sport here is, you know, you could have, you know, trainers that have barns as big as, you know, the Steve Asmussens and the Chad Browns, and they win, you know, 400, 500, 600 races per year. And then you've got a guy like Whiteley who had a very small barn, worked with just really high quality horses and high percentage, you know, trainer. But it shows that there's different levels of, you know, the way training is done. You know, private clients are things you don't see a lot too often anymore. You know, the smaller barns versus the bigger barns. But if you look at Whiteley's quality, you know, he certainly was among the best of his era. You know, and he's going to get looked at forward. This was his last year on the contemporary ballot. The next time around, he's going to go to the Historic Review Committee, which is a little bit more of a specialized group, and they'll get a chance to, you know, review his credentials there. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
When it comes to the Pillars of the Turf, which is one of my favorite parts of and recent developments, just wonderful to get Mrs. Chandler in, and Mill Ridge and Doc Chandler, and the operation, which, you know, is more of a contemporary, honestly. I mean, even though it goes back to the 60s, it you know, Mill Ridge is a relatively, in the pantheon of thoroughbred racing breeding, is fairly young. But how wonderful to have her recognized while she's on the right side of the turf.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, you good point there that, you know, this isn't Claiborne that goes back, you know, over 100 years or anything like that. But, you know, the impact that she had in Mill Ridge, you know, breeding the first American breeder to have a Epsom Derby winner, you know, with Sir Ivor, really, you know, kind of launched that farm and had such a huge impact on the American breeding and selling market, and just everything she's done in this sport. I mean, you know, she's an Eclipse Award of Merit winner. She's served on so many boards and helped so many organizations, such as, you know, the Breeders' Cup and COBA, TOBA, and the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association. Done a lot of research, you know, for the Gluck Foundation and other places. And Mill Ridge now has a reputation, you know, thanks to her. Her family's all involved now, Doc Chandler and Heedley Bell and Price Bell and the others, you know, continuing on that legacy. But, yeah, it's great that, you know, she's getting recognized now. John Hendrickson, our museum president, when I told him the inductees, you know, he wanted to be the one to make the personal call. So he was able to call Doc Chandler up, and, you know, everybody down there is thrilled with it. And Alice Heedley Chandler is certainly absolutely a pillar of the turf.
The other two members on the pillar side, you know, both have been gone a while. George Widener, certainly, but makes perfect sense. And Widener, you know, contribution to the game in so many different capacities. And Keen Dangerfield, a fascinating character, and you know, one of the absolute, I mean, legends when it came to, you know, being a steward and you know, creating, formatting what, you know, what a steward's responsibility is in the game. So that's about as strong a trio, Widener, Dangerfield, and Chandler. That's about as good a trio as you're going to produce.
Yeah, I absolutely love the Pillars of the Turf category, and this is something we've had for, you know, only about 6 years now, amazingly. And, you know, for the longest time, the museum basically inducted horses, jockeys, and trainers. And, you know, we finally were able to get over the hump and recognize, you know, this is a sport that has so many other contributors to it that have made major impacts and have brought the game forward. And when you look at the inductees we've had as pillars of the turf over the last few years, you know, we've been able to recognize people who've had great influences, breeders and people who have founded racetracks or been innovators or have been people who have been leaders in the sport and advocated for aftercare. And, you know, just to recognize these people that have really brought the game forward, I think it's, you know, one of the better things that the museum has done, you know, in the last decade or so. And you look at these three who get in this year, very diverse too. You know, I mean, Dangerfield, you know, regarded by a lot of people as one of the greatest stewards of all time. You know, he came from a training background. He worked at a total of 17 different tracks as an association steward. So his influence on the sport was everywhere. And then you've got George Widener, who bred over 100 stakes winners, major influence in the jockey club, major influence as an owner. He was president of the National Museum of Racing for a long time. So these people really had major impacts in the sport, and it's great to see them get their due here.
Well, and you referenced some of the innovations and things that the museum, the hall, are trying to execute. I think we're pretty much there's no mares that are still foaling, right? Did all the babies drop?
And as far as foal patrol goes, yep, we're through season three. We have, you know, plans to move forward with it again for another year. It's been very popular. You know, we've tweaked it a little bit each year, but it's been a very popular program. You know, it's had something that's had, unbelievably to us, millions of views. Each year, a new set of mares come in, and we get a lot of feedback from people who follow it, sending us messages and blogs, and it's really taken off. And then you can see the rest of the industry's kind of jumped on with some of these things, too. Now, a lot of the magazines and bloggers are doing foal reports more frequently than they had before. There's even a couple other farms and stuff that we've seen that have followed with kind of doing their cameras and updates and just keeping everybody apprised as to what's going on in the breeding shed. And it's something that I think has just been great for the sport. Everybody's been able to kind of see something that, unless you are on a farm in, you know, Kentucky or New York or Florida or one of these places, it's been something that you haven't had a chance to see previously. And it's really, I think, been a great thing for the sport.
Brian Bouye from the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. And a couple of notes too, Brian, in addition to what we just covered with the inductees, the class of 2020, obviously we don't necessarily know about a ceremony, whether it's going to have to be a ceremony on Zoom or whether it's going to be possible to, you know, to have a physical ceremony. Any thoughts in that direction?
Yeah, well, certainly we're paying attention to everything that's, you know, going on in state mandates and kind of waiting to hear, like a lot of other people, from the governor's office as to, you know, what's going to be allowed as far as gatherings and such. You know, we've seen the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Boxing Hall of Fame, both here in New York, have postponed their ceremony to next year. And our museum's executive board is going to certainly make a decision on that, you know, within the next couple weeks, I would imagine. But one thing we decided is we don't want to do a virtual ceremony. We don't want to do a Zoom or anything like that. You know, we've kind of had the discussion already that this is such an honor, and we want people's family to be there, and we want their friends, and, you know, we want to be able to treat these inductees with this being such an honor, which we hope it is, they feel it is. So we thought a virtual ceremony just wouldn't quite have the right feel to it for something this prestigious. So we're hoping that we'll be able to have it this year. If we're not able to, you know, we'll look at doing a double ceremony next year. But we're going to make sure that the inductees are honored properly.
Outstanding. And then when it comes to the remodeling and the refashioning of the hall and the museum, give everybody an update too while we have a chance, Brian.
Yeah, that's another thing that's unfortunately on pause right now because of, you know, the New York pause that's going on with you know, everything that related to the COVID pandemic. But, you know, we were hopeful to open July 16th. With our new Hall of Fame, with our new signature film, just an absolutely incredible experience. And we've made a lot of progress on the construction, but we're kind of in a waiting pattern on that now. We're still hopeful to be able to open this summer. The governor's stay-at-home mandate is through the 15th, and then they're going to start evaluating things like construction and things like that. If we're able to get back and start having the construction move forward around the middle or later in the month, there's still an excellent chance that we will be able to open this summer if, you know, we're allowed to do that. But the July 16th is probably a little bit wishful thinking at this point. So we have some built-in time into the schedule for that, but that's obviously all disappeared. So we're kind of waiting like everybody else. But, you know, when we do open, we're really excited. This is going to be an absolutely new experience. If you've been to the museum before, you're going to want to come back because the Hall of Fame is going to be something completely different than you saw before. The new film that we've got working with the Donna Lawrence production team is just absolutely phenomenal. I saw a sneak peek of it along with some of our board members, you know, a couple months back, and it's absolutely something that, you know, the whole sport is going to be able to be proud of, and we're thrilled with the way the new interactives are coming along. So it's going to be amazing. We're itching to get it open for everybody, but obviously circumstances have kind of paused that for right now.
Completely understand. There's also plans for those that visit racingmuseum.org. There's plans for a new website as well. There's been so many advances in recent years. And, Brian, I appreciate it. We'll you know, keep us informed, and we'll pass it along to everybody. And congratulations again to Mark Cassie and to Wise Dan. I got to send Charlie Lopresti and Amy a congratulations. He's out in the field probably. He's oblivious, but maybe he gets
Charlie a couple days ago, so he's thrilled about it. You're right, he's probably out in the field with a mare right now or something, but you know, he was really excited about it, and you know, he's going to pass along the news to the members of the Fink family, and hopefully we get to recognize him this summer. But if not, we'll make sure it's something that's absolutely done right for next year.
Well, and also reiterating the, you know, those that were alive to get the call, Mrs. Chandler and Daryl McHark, and that's just great. Brian, this is always one of my favorite conversations of the year, and well done, and whatever I can do, let me know.
Steve, always great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Brian Bouye, and you follow the museum and MRHOF on Twitter, National Museum of Racing, Hall of Fame, and racingmuseum.org. And everybody loves Brian, even though he's a Red Sox fan. We're going to stay right here. We've only got about 10 minutes. It's been a full morning with the two, you know, full conversations between Bill Boland and Andy Beyer, and also Sid, and the Hall of Fame announcement. And here is Broadcasting Hall of Famer Seth Merrow.
I like that. From your ear, from your mouth to yada yada. But that's never, it's never going to happen. It was good to hear Brian say that they would postpone it if they could, because it really is that this is the kind of thing that these folks deserve a nice crowd in there. And since they moved the ceremony over to Facing Tipton, the pavilion, it's just become more and more popular to the point now where if you're not there very early, you're not getting a seat. But that serves the inductees well. So I think that's a good decision that if they can't do it live this year, push it back so everybody gets the appropriate, you know, recognition from a nice crowd in the building.
Now, we'll talk to at least to Daryl McHark and to Mark Cassie, and maybe to Alice Chandler as well. We've had Doc on. We've had Doc Chandler, but not Alice, actually. And, of course, it was her family's, you know, she received the farm and a handful of brood mares, and really even, I mean, as you know, as much of a legacy as she was inheriting, she advanced it with Mill Ridge. So really a nice group. Mark Cassie, Wise Dan, I'm disappointed that I'm disappointed. Kona Gold deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and so does David Whiteley and Corey Nakatani. I mean, how Nakatani is left out when, you know, his contemporaries have been already recognized and his resume is absolutely comparable.
It was a tough ballot.
I don't understand.
You could have gone
Who'd you vote? You vote, right?
Yes. I had both of the inductees. I like Blind Luck. I like Howard Agress. And I like Reg to Riches. And I didn't know what to do with the rest of them. I mean, I could have made a case for I could have voted yes for the entire ballot as far as I was concerned. But I think everybody else is just they'll get their shot again. Well, except for David Whiteley, but I think as Brian said, I think the historic committee will put him in.
Yeah, they will. They undoubtedly will. So, well, meanwhile, Seth, let's get in a couple of licks here on a good Tampa card. Tampa. It ends up being very important that Tampa stayed on through May, because until we get Churchill and Santa Anita, ideally New York and some of the other venues, West Virginia is going to get up and running, et cetera. We're starting to get going here. Tampa filling things in nicely. And this is a nice card today.
Yeah. And first I'll go back and just say hats off to Oaklawn and that they kept racing during this period. That was a great meet that they had put together and highlighted by obviously the great weekend card as well. So congratulations to them on, keeping things going and keeping the helping with the two Florida tracks and Fauna and Will Rogers, et cetera, keeping the racing game in the eye. But yeah, Tampa kicks off the extended meet today. You want to take a look at what the late pick for the last race today is a nice race. The two AEs, I'm sad they scratched, but that's a nice race. But take a look at the late pick for.
Well, you can either do that or maybe cherry pick. The late pick four starts with race five, which is a good mile turf allowance for fillies. But there's also that 7 furlong fourth race, and I'm curious. That's actually the pick five. Did you what'd you do in the fourth?
I went 6-3. 6-3-7. I had the one in the mix, the one scratch. But I went with Go-Go Shoes. And I kind of went back and forth between Go-Go Shoes and Hopeful Growth. But I thought Judy's Way was interesting with Santino jumping on board and going to the race two back. Judy's Way is interesting. But Go-Go Shoes for me, the morning line favorite is Hopeful Growth. Go-Go Shoes is close. It'll be interesting to see where the betting public goes. But both are coming in from out of town. Go-Go Shoes off a race two back at Tampa that was a nice maiden breaker and then went over to Gulfstream. I thought the return to Tampa make it Go-Go Shoes back to the race two back. But Hopeful Growth debuted up at Monmouth, won that one, and then the follow-up was off a layoff over at Gulfstream. Nice second-place finish. So coming to Tampa for the first time, Hopeful Growth might be tough. But as I say, Judy's Way with the race two back and Santino is interesting as well.
The fifth, that mile turf allowance, these are fillies and mares, and this is a good group, too. And you got some decisions to make here. You got some horses that might be coming up to a big effort, and by one of them I will refer to as 8-1, clear as day for Stidham, just off the maiden breaker. And a horse like this that takes 8 tries to break her maiden, sometimes they just keep going forward. I that horse caught my eye at 8-1, and then you got to make a decision about Tim Ham. It's her lucky day. This is a 4-year-old filly by Poseidon's Warrior that's going to go back to the turf after it looked like she made some advance as a dirt horse running some nice races. So I don't know. This is a tricky little group.
I put Shug's horse on top, and I was a little disappointed 3-1 when I saw the morning line because the horse hasn't been seen in so long. I thought we'd get a little more. And, again, I'll be interested to see where the betting public goes. But all of that said, part of the reason I picked the horse is because Shug, when he's coming over to Tampa the past couple of weeks, has just been red hot. Over the past 8 starts overall, including a win over at Gulfstream, he's 5-8. But he's 4 of his last 5 over at Tampa. That's going back, a week and a half, 2 weeks. So he's picking his spot, Shug, when he comes over to Tampa. So I thought that this horse might be interesting. despite the layoff. I had Stormy D underneath on the buyers. Peaceful Feeling is maybe a little bit interesting off the layoff, still lightly raced, and maybe there's still some upside potential for that one in the seasonal debut. If I was, you know, pick four, I'd probably also toss in Flighty Almighty. I looked at both of the horses you mentioned. Between the two, yeah, I like Clear as Day is one who I'd play around. Tennille might be a little bit interesting as well. 10-1 on the morning line. That one's firing some numbers that match up with this bunch. I think the connections are maybe just a little less well-known and may get ignored a little bit. But that one, I had it 7-5-1-8, though. But, yeah, there are a couple other interesting horses in here you could play with.
What about that Nightcap, the three-year-olds? There's some horses in here that are certainly well-bred, and Suge is going to probably send the favorite here in U.S. Army Corps, who is overdue, actually, for the maiden breaker. Stidham in here with a Calabrese homebred out of Dreaming of Anna. How about that? A declaration of war colt. They're going to go a mile on the grass.
Yeah, I originally had the 11 on top. That's an AE that got scratched from Chad and Judmont. And now with that, the scratch, I debated putting Big Dreaming on top, and I'd switch things up if I had the chance, because Big Dreaming's interesting. By declaration of war, he's good with first out runners. Stidham is okay. Nice steady string of workouts, as you say, by Dreaming of Anna. So there are some win early siblings, including Fast Anna, who won her first two. But another one, Dreamologist, was third in the debut and won the second career start. So I like this one first time out. Santino on board. As I say, I had it before the scratches with U.S. Army Corps on top of that one, because obviously off the seasonal debut, the near miss, you have to pay attention to that one. Food and Wine and Talaco underneath from the 8-9-2-1, but Food and Wine, a couple of starts as a two-year-old last year, and has the ability to maybe to come back as an improved three-year-old. And Talaco by Caraconte, that's kind of a sneaky good win early sire, so that one at a little bit of a price is interesting as well. 8-9-2-1.
Well, I think you got to use the six, Fit for a King, second time starter for Stidham, Street Sense out of the really nice Tizaquina, who was a hell of a stakes mare and going long on the grass. So might be a price, might get overlooked. Fit for a King, throw in the six with Seth's horses, and Seth's got the analysis up on your Twitter page.
I do.
All right, so I'll send that out too. I want to thank Andy Beyer, Bill Boland, Sid, Brian Bouye, and Seth Merrow, Broadcasting Hall of Famer. I'm going to start the campaign. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Tampa, Fonner, Will Rogers, back with you tomorrow. Big Thursday show. Thanks.